Welcome to the Collecting Keys Real Estate Investing Podcast with your host, Mike DeHaan and Dan Austin. From wins, losses, horror stories, and tactics for optimizing your business, Mike and Dan take a real, uncensored deep dive into the ins and outs of running a full-time real estate investment and wholesaling business.
What is going on, guys? Welcome to the Collecting Keys Real Estate Investing Podcast, Mike and Dan Show, where I, Mike DeHaan, and my co-host, Dan Austin, talk real estate, business, pop culture, everything in between. I don't know, whatever floats our boat for the week, but we try to give you some tidbits of business knowledge in here thrown in.
Try to make it valuable, but you never know. You never know what's going to come out of our mouth.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of let it go. Typically, we record this as like a, it's like our intro to our own internal business meeting that we have. So it gives us the opportunity to get whatever nonsense we want to talk about out of the way while also still being productive. So anyways, thanks for joining us today. We are in the middle of January and we had a deal come back together. Well, first off, our first week of January was bananas. If you listened last week, we got 10 signed around. And then we got another one last week. We just got one signed around last week, but it was one of my favorite to date because it was the perfect example of team members doing things right when it all came together. Mm-hmm. Because we had a seller that was like about to go into foreclosure. And, you know, it was kind of getting into a phase where he was looking like he was going to be in big trouble. And then one of our sales guys followed up with him. And basically, like, we had missed the deal in the past, but he'd signed with another investor. One of our guys followed up with him on the closing date of when that was supposed to close and said, hey, how'd the closing go? Just checking in on building rapport. And lo and behold, the deal had fallen through. So we were able to swoop in and not only get a pretty sick deal, but also save the guy from going into tax foreclosure and kind of losing everything. So was a great win-win all around. It's going to be a super sick deal. So I'm excited about
that. Yeah, and it was like a story of solving problems from what I understand. So basically, you're right, the follow-up, I mean, I don't know how many times we have to say this, follow-up is so important because not every time you follow up are you going to get a deal. So it doesn't feel like it, but then if you do it consistently, you do get deals.
Yeah.
Anyhow, yeah, it was another piece of it was solving the guy's problem because the guy was literally going into foreclosure the next day. He had to pay his taxes to the county the next day. And essentially, like, if he didn't do that, he would lose the house. We wouldn't have gotten a deal. So recognizing that pain and that issue and saying, hey, what if I pay your taxes for you?
Exactly.
Right. And he's like, okay, we can do that. Because then, and then we offered him a price. Well, lo and behold, in that same time period, he actually came back and said, I found money. I can pay my taxes. I can't accept your offer. It's too low. Okay. Well, we only offered you that because we had to take the risk of spending X amount of thousands of dollars on your house without knowing what was going to happen. And so then at that point, it was like, okay, let's negotiate an offer that works for you. So it's just like finding that pain point, helping him solve the problem and being there for the seller all along the way on top of the whole follow-up win. It was just kind of a cool little deal.
Exactly. And now that seller, instead of losing his house, he's going to be walking away with like six figures plus on the purchase, on the sale of his property. So, you know, and it's still a distressed property. I mean, he's the kind of landlord that can't pay $5,000 in property taxes. So you can imagine what the rental property looks like, right? You know, it's just exactly what you picture there.
I like when those kind of deals come together because it's what we say, like everything we always preach, that's the example of why we preach it.
Exactly. Yeah. And just process is working, team members doing what they want to do. And you know, investor win aside, it is as like a business owner, one of those things that just gets you super pumped up because it's like, sweet. Like, even though we are constantly in this state of kind of like disarray and trying to figure out how to make stuff more efficient, every now and then you get a little reminder that maybe your stuff isn't as messed up as you thought it was. So that was a big win from last week. And then aside from that, we've just had a bunch of ups and downs that we've been working on. Our texting system, as we started to scale in these different markets, we had to like apply for basically this like corporate level of like the texting platform that we use. And this is, I hate freaking tech companies, man. Like the worst customer service exists in tech companies. I don't know why, like they're all extremely profitable. They make a huge amount of money, but they just put zero of those dollars into the customer service. And I say they're not profitable. They all produce a huge amount of revenue. They are famously unprofitable, but they put none of the money towards customer service. It doesn't matter if you're working, like looking at like, you know, Instagram or Microsoft or whatever, the customer service always sucks. And with the...
Yeah, they have ping pong tables in their office.
Right, yeah, exactly. They have all the things that we don't care about. They have...
Like, what?
What were they taking out of the Twitter studio? They had like a... It was like a $17,000 meat slicer. It's like cool.
Latte machines and shit that you don't care about. Meanwhile, they're just sitting there playing ping pong, talking about how cool it would be to create a chat bot to talk to the customers because they don't know how to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So then you like need to go through this customer service process to be able to get the volume allowance that we need to be able to text in all of our markets. And, you know, we go through, there's an automated process and they're like, cool, thanks so much. This will be approved in 48 hours. That was now... almost 2 full weeks ago. And I don't know. They basically
these are things
they
don't teach you when you go to like learn how to start a business class. Like, oh, by the way, somebody might shut down a revenue source for you because they're lazy.
Yeah, honestly, or just because they have their own bullshit. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Somebody else's systems could screw your company. You could do everything right. And then for 2 weeks, you're not going to get any leads because we just don't do our job right.
Yeah. I mean, and like, if I had a little bit of warning, we could have at least timed like our direct mail and stuff so that it would fill in this gap time. But instead what happens is, you know, our direct mail is falling, you know, shortly after that all sort of happened. So we have like this really awkward gap and it's just unnecessarily quiet because we had an unbeknownst thing. But I mean, I think it's a good business lesson, regardless of what it is, to always have contingencies for every part of your business, you know, like whether that's contingent customer source, that's a contingent platform that you use for marketing, you know, that's, I don't know if contingent is the right word, redundancy is actually the thing I'm going for. You want like some sort of like backup plan, whether it's in your staff, you know, like if you have like, if your entire business relies on one key staff member, what happens if that person quits or they disappear off face of the earth, they get hit by a bus, whatever. Then if you don't have a backup, you're fucked. I mean, that's a big reason that we started wholesaling outside of our local market was because it was like, we need a backup plan for if this market starts to get weird, which it has a little bit.
It has, but we're able to still keep producing. Yeah, I've talked to a couple different people now that just lost their ass.
Yeah.
Like Apple changed its privacy policies, right? Because they were no longer able to target people specifically because their entire business, all their lead gen was on social media. Right. There's no redundant lead gen for them. And that's probably okay because there might be some businesses where that's it. That's the only way you can get lead gen or the best way you can get lead gen or the cheapest way. But you have to recognize that if that changes and goes away, you're screwed if you don't have redundancy.
Yeah. I remember that was a huge thing like 7-10 years ago when there was all these people that it was like the beginning of influencers that were making legitimate money on social media. And you would have these people that had built these huge platforms on like Instagram or Facebook or whatever. And then they would, they would change the algorithm and literally they would go from making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a month to nothing overnight.
Immediately. And if you're a guy like Mr. Beast, you know, obviously that didn't happen to him, but he famously spends most of his profits on his next video. And so like, if you're spending, like say you have $2 million saved up in cash and you're like a 20-year-old doing cool videos. And the next thing you know, you spent all that and you go to drop that video and like you get 12 views. You're like, oh shit.
Yeah, right. I know. Honestly.
It's a risk. It's a risk.
Yeah. Have you ever watched any of his videos? He actually does like some good, like legitimately entertaining stuff. And the way that he throws around money, it's funny. Like, I don't know how I feel about it. Like, I understand like the shtick that he does where he's like giving it away and all sorts of things. But I also like get this thing of it's like dystopian future where you have like this super rich guy who's like, I'm going to make all of these people do dumb shit and I'm just going to throw wads of cash at
them. Right. Yeah.
And sure, like he does it from a benevolent sort of position, but still it's kind of a weird zone to be in, I feel like.
Yeah, I think if you follow him, which most, like, I guess you would call him Gen Zers now, and maybe some millennials follow him from the beginning where he didn't have that, like, I see how you're like, oh, that's not a big deal. But like, if you're just stepping into like his world right now, you're like, well, that is kind of weird. Like the video, the big one where he had the guy in the house, like if you stay here X amount of days, you can't do this. But then he's like cutting the house in half and just doing things just to wreck this dude's day. I was just like, oh man. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I saw this other one where they had, it was like 100 parents and 100 kids and they had them in like these giant rooms next to each other. And basically they were in there for like several days. It was like 100 hours or something crazy. And what the whole competition was like the group that lasted the longest was going to get like $500,000 that was going to be split amongst all of the people that were in there. right? So basically you kind of like wanted people to leave, but like you wanted to like have the most, because like if people didn't, you know, if your team had the most, you won, but you want to have less in there as possible.
That is a mind fuck.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
So it was kind of interesting. But then like as he was going through it, he would just start doing shit like, oh, yeah, I'll give you $5,000 if you leave right now. And people would be like, done. Right. They would just like walk out. But I'm like, just, I don't know, man. It's like a, it's like the king playing with like all of his jesters and his peasants. And he's just like throwing it around for his own entertainment. But like, you know, it means a lot to those people. And it isn't good fun, but it's, I don't know.
That,
it just seems
funny. That reminds you when you talk about, because I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, I've seen him do that where they had to like keep their hand or their feet on something. And he was just walking around giving people money if they would quit. It reminds me. It's like, this is another, like a devious position. Reminds me when I was in the army and we were in the Ranger training and we were just getting our asses kicked for a few weeks, like out in the field, rain, everything. It was just miserable. We were all wet and we just got back from like, we did like a 6 mile run in the morning out in the woods, like with all your gear on. And we came back, we had to do like a road march, like where you're rucking with like, I don't know, 50 pounds on your back, all your shit. Rucked like several miles, and then we got back there and we knew it was like our last day, and they're like, all right, get your shit, we're walking back to the barracks, which was like 20 something miles away. And like dudes were broken off, like their feet, like my feet, I just remember they're like hamburger meat, like mosquito bites all of your body, chafing, like you're just miserable at this point. And they're like, but if you want to quit, come over here, we'll get you some, like we'll get you some hot cocoa and you can ride the bus back if you quit. And like a ton of dudes raised their hand. Like the guy next to me is like, I'm going to quit. And I was like, dude, don't do it. Don't quit. And then he quit and he just walked over there. And then the buses pulled up and they're like, haha, everybody on the bus. And we all rode back. I was like, that's so devious. But that's like the same kind of like, he's doing the same thing. It's kind of funny, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was in those Ranger instructor's boots, that would have been fun to do, but also kind of wreck people's lives. But you're trying to build mental toughness, I guess. In the army, Mr. Beast is just trying to fuck with people.
Yeah, yeah.
For money.
Yes, he's doing it for profit, which he does. Like I said, he does give back to people, but yeah, like I said, the sort of, I don't know, mindset of that is funny to me, especially too, because like his, I mean, maybe this is why it works, is, you know, a lot of the Gen Z viewership, at least this is my Gen, you know, my millennial sort of view, I feel like a lot of them lean towards like anti-capitalist, like socialist tendencies. So maybe they're like, oh, it's like a rich guy that is, you know, giving back all his money. I'm like, yeah, but understand, he's still worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
On a pro forma basis, he's probably a billionaire for what he can produce and what he will produce.
Yeah, he's not far away. But there was that, and he's smart too. He got offered an insane amount of money. I think it was $1 billion or several billion dollars for his YouTube channel. And he was like, he passed on it and basically said, like, with the branding that I have, if I have 100% control and the other entities I'm going to be able to grow with this, I'm going to be able to make so much more money than that. And this is like, you know, the foresight of, what is he, 24, 25?
I got some of this guy. I would have been like, sweet, peace. $5,000, I'm out. You can have my YouTube channel.
Yeah, I would have done it for less than that, you know, but... Anyway, so that's tangent, but...
I was just thinking, I was like, how do we get out of this hole? How do we pivot, Mike? What are we going to do now?
I know. How do we pivot back to business? We're in trouble. Yeah, so other stuff we got going on in the business right now, though. We're hard at work after our business coach chewed our ass last week. Yeah, in a very productive way. Like, basically came out... So we hired this business coach at the beginning of the year, Steve Rosenberg. You're actually going to hear an interview with him over the next, like, sometime in the next month or so, because we did a podcast grant, how we connected with him. But we started working at the beginning of the year, and he came in and started picking apart our business, gave a bunch of homework. And then we had like our first, I would say, like follow-up call with him after he gave us our initial round of homework, and basically came back and he's like, what are you guys doing?
Well, first of all, he's like, well, you're going to have to redo that one. Like, you guys didn't even do that right.
Yeah. And the thing that sucks is like, I felt pretty good about stuff that we sent him.
Yeah.
But then, you know, but this is why you hire him, right? Is to challenge you and to help you sort of grow. And his general viewpoint is that every business should be built in a way to make it sellable, even if you have no intention to exit, because that's what you need to do to make it so that you're not like a slave to your business. Is have it so that, you know, staff and third parties of that can come in, get integrated, and not have to, you know, try to figure out what's in your head.
Which is really hard to do, though. Like, that in itself is hard. Not like, oh, I can't let go of the process. That's part of it. But part of it is how do you find time to stop doing revenue generating activities to do these system systematizing SOP activities. It's really hard. You're working double time.
Yeah. Well, it's especially hard when you've done what we've done. We've just kind of like shot from the hip and done crazy stuff for the last 3 years,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We're always making money. So we're like, yeah, screw it. Like, let's just keep doing that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we basically already like built the roof, and now we're trying to build the foundation after the roof is already up. You know, it's just super challenging.
We've got a bunch of sticks holding each corner up. We're like, oh shit, concrete trucks here.
Yeah, but it's been a heavy sort of shift of mindset. And yeah, that call we had with him, I can't remember the last time that I felt that uncomfortable by something that I knew was extremely productive. You know, it kind of takes me back to.
I didn't feel uncomfortable at all. That's funny how you were. How you felt uncomfortable. I didn't feel uncomfortable. I was just like, oh, this yep, okay, got it.
Bro, you had this look on your face during the call that like, it reminded me of like when we were in college and we both realized that we had just like screwed up horribly on like a test or like an assignment and something. And you were just like, oh God.
Yeah, but I wasn't like, oh man, I feel terrible. I was just like, yeah, this is how you get your ass kicked.
I don't know, semantics, but. Either way, so we've been working on that super heavily, building that out. And it's been fun too with our staff, because like a lot of our staff have been with us, I don't want to say during like the shit show, during just like the all over the place way. And now getting them kind of on board with having some more structure and that sort of stuff. I always had this assumption that when you try to like wrangle in the crew and you try to like keep it a little more structured, that people would kind of revolt against that. And surprisingly, the complete opposite.
The opposite.
They're like, thank God, we're finally going to have some structure to our job.
Yeah. Some systems, some like how-tos, some like goals, some, you know, ways to build and grow. Yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be really good. So I'm excited. And, you know, as we've gone through a lot of this too, it's spurred some different questions. So one of the things that we've been doing with our group coaching program, our mastermind program, the Instant Investor program, has been giving our members the opportunity to request like different forms of content, whether, you know, long form content that they want to dive into more so than just on one of our twice a week group calls that we do. Like they want to like hear some more long form stuff, whether it's through the podcast, a YouTube video, new course material, whatever. And as we've been going through this, you know, explain to them the process of being their business coach, the questions come up a couple times of, you know, going past that one person business and, you know, scaling up into like, where you have staff and you have these other people that are involved, kind of like when to do that and how about to approach it and things that we wish we had known back when we started that. And first off, I guess the one thing I'll say is if you're a one-man show right now, like just a very, very base level, if you're a one-man show right now, the number one tip that I can give you is every single repetitive task that you do, whether it's like ordering marketing material, it's analyzing deals, do all that sort of stuff, just like record yourself doing it with like a Loom video, just talking to yourself about like what exactly you're doing, and then just save that and you'll be like 90% of the way there to like being able to bring on staff.
That's the key there. Yeah. The big key there is taking the time to do that. And then a lot of that repetitive stuff can be done by a virtual employee or a local admin or something that you want or whatever that position is. But that's the challenging part, doing it as or before everything turns into a spider web of a mess of like who does what.
Yeah. And I think that the problem that occurs is they go out, they find the, you know, in-house employee, the virtual employee, whatever, and they say, cool, now I need to build a standard operating procedure. I need to build a guide for them to do what they need to do. And that sucks because it feels like you're not productive. Whereas when you are in the early phases, if you go about, you know, being proactive of recording and documenting what you're doing on a day-to-day basis while working on your business by yourself, and it doesn't even need to be perfect, like literally just like get a Loom recording and just do whatever you would normally be doing and just talk about it. If that's going to be more productive than you trying to now do it from like a, I don't know, like while you're also trying to manage this person that you just brought on, right? And it sounds kind of silly maybe, but like honestly, if you do that when you're starting out and you're getting ready to bring that person, like your life will be so much easier and it will reduce an incredible amount of work and headache when you bring that person into the fold.
Yeah. And that assumes you want to move out of the solopreneur role, which I would highly recommend at minimum as a solopreneur. You always have a virtual in this business, at least one virtual employee, like a VA that's you're paying someone from the Philippines or somewhere, wherever, to do those tasks that you're talking. So much of it is repetitive and repeatable that you can pass off to people.
Yeah. Well, I would say that being a true solo solopreneur doesn't make sense in any business. I mean, like,
no,
you know, even if you're, I don't know, you're doing OnlyFans and like, you know, like it is literally
gotta
only
do your bookkeeping.
So exactly. Honestly, someone has to do your bookkeeping. Someone has to go and schedule your posts. Someone has to go and like, I don't know, engage with people that reach out to you.
Bag up your bath water that you're going to mail out to people.
or like on that note, okay, what, you know, what would be the most time consuming part of that? I think about repetitive tasks. Imagine printing off all those shipping labels or just like processing the addresses.
Right.
If you're going to do that yourself, it's going to take forever if you're selling like 50 of those. But like,
absolutely.
But you can get a VA to go and do all that for like $5 an hour. And it'll free up your time and it'll give you the opportunity to do everything else. But like, seriously, whether, you know, you're an artist, you're in real estate, you know, you're selling widgets, whatever, there's going to be repetitive tasks in business and you should absolutely outsource that. Even if you're like determined to be a solopreneur, just find like a part-time VA, can work for you 10 hours a week, 20 hours a week, and just do the stuff that you honestly don't like to do and stop lying to yourself, pretend like you do it like that.
100%. So then the question becomes, and this kind of dovetails off of our conversation last week, which was like the contentment versus ambition. But at what point do you make that decision to go beyond you? Maybe that's to hire your acquisition manager. Maybe that's to hire your disposition manager, because you can do very well. We've interviewed people on this podcast that do very well with just them and a partner, them and a spouse, or just them. I mean, we're talking a couple $100,000 a year in profits.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's easily possible with you and a staff member. I mean, we interviewed someone earlier today and we have several people that are going to be on this show here over the next couple of months that do multi seven figures as them and a spouse, and that's
a partner, them and a spouse. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I mean is like, so there's this, like, the question still comes like, do you need to and should you in this business line scale up beyond that? Like, what's the win? Because one thing I will say about those folks is they're definitely busy.
They are extremely busy. And so I guess here's how I viewed it. So need to look at bringing in people. I mean, first off, everyone always says like, find out what your why is, right? That's kind of like that answer since we do okay. I didn't like that answer when I was still trying to figure it out, because I'm like, my why is to fucking make money. Like, that's my why at this moment, because I don't have the freedom to have like an actual cause, right? Honestly.
Yeah.
So I would say that if you have a part of your business that is, you know, is a weakness. So for us, when we started and we decided to bring in our first staff, I went to a mastermind and with our business coach, our wholesaling coach at the time, and he was like, I think that you guys just suck at sales. You need to outsource that if you want to be successful. So we went and we outsourced that. And lo and behold, our business took off because we found someone that filled the weakness that we had. So I would say that's the first thing you look at, is if you have a weakness that is restricting your growth with the current scale that you're already doing or the scale of where you want to go, look at bringing on staff to fill that gap. Mm-hmm. Second thing is, if you have parts of your business that you are constantly putting off, you are not doing, that you are falling behind on because you hate them, or you're falling behind on because you don't have time, then it is time to look at bringing someone on to manage those things, like necessary parts of your business. Like you said, bookkeeping, things like data management, right? With a lot of people, is, you know, I mean, in our instant investor program, that's one of the biggest things that they hate, is they hate the data portion because they come from a sales background, right? Like social media posts.
Lead management.
Yeah, lead management, you know, managing your social media, managing your website, all these things that do nothing but take time, but need to be done on a weekly or monthly basis. If you find that you get to those things and you're just like, oh my God, I want to do anything except this, then you should probably find someone to do those things.
That's fascinating. And it reminds me of your first point about things that you might suck at and hiring somebody. It reminds me of the conversation we were having yesterday about Richard Branson and how he basically started Virgin Records, and he doesn't even like music or care for music. And he just hires people that were really good at records, really good at producing music, all that sort of stuff. But he knew that, and you had an interesting take. I can't remember what the quote was that you quoted him on. You should do that, because that to me is fascinating. It was a very good example of a very, very productive, a very successful person saying, you don't have to be good at it. You just have to find the right people to surround yourself with it.
Yeah. So what I talked about yesterday when we were chatting about that. So yeah, Richard Branson, he did a an interview with Tim Ferriss. It was years ago now I listened to this, but it's funny. He talked about that Virgin Records thing. And this was actually before I left my W-2, but this was something that really stuck with me, this whole way that he was a visionary around all the businesses that he went. And he's heavily relied on staff and experts and building teams around every endeavor he's done. Even Virgin Records, when he first launched it, when he was, you know, super young. And he's famous for not really being that into music, but he had this huge record company, right? And what he said is that, like, in this interview with Tim Ferriss, go look back, it's probably 2018. He was like, it's too many people, they try to build like businesses around their like literal interests, right? So they're like, I like music.
Their passion.
Exactly, their passion. They're like, I like music, I want to be a musician. Whereas he said he liked business, he liked like different aspects of that. He liked networking and sales and like extroverted person. Those are things that he liked. And he took that interest and applied it towards a demand, right? Which was music and records. So he recognized there was demand for that. And he said, well, I can take my interest in networking with high profile people and like sort of building this brand and like the actual design and the theory of it, which was what he liked, and applied it towards Virgin Records because there was a huge demand for it.
Yeah.
And that can be said kind of with like everything, right? Like, you know, if you're, I don't know, let's say that you love to draw, instead of like 100% saying like, I'm going to be like a custom artist who just like does all these genres all the time. What if you can apply that towards, you know, like a different like brand or like a story or like an internet profile or things like that, that has a little bit more of a demand, you know, comedic videos that are going to, people are going to care about more so than just like, you know, your doodles that you do on like a notepad, right? Like just have to spin it a little bit, which takes a little bit of internal thought and definitely isn't an easy thing to figure out. But I remember that. And that's, I mean, even like for me personally, I didn't have an interest in real estate when I got into this business.
Yeah.
What I liked was the system, like going through the system building process. Like when I originally quit my W-2, my goal was to get into startups and like tech and these sort of things. And I ended up being a real estate investor, which is pretty different, but the systemization of it is not far removed from like a tech business. If you look out on the back end, it's very data heavy. You know, there's a lot of time working with like customer facing stuff, a lot of problem solving. And those are the aspects that I like that translated over to the real estate business. And that seemed to be where the demand and the opportunity was for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you and I are in agreement on this, like real estate. I mean, although it is cool to drive down the road and be like, oh, I own that, or I flipped that, or I did that. Like there's like that, like that's kind of cool. Cause it's just like anything that you produce is kind of fun to look at and share with people. But real estate itself is asset, like doesn't get me super excited, but there is an opportunity and has been an opportunity for us to do things that do make us passionate, like entrepreneurship and systematizing and building a business that produces money for us, and you know, which also produces adventures and other things for us. And the thing I love about this whole conversation is just the proof in the pudding that as you look to scale, if you aren't good at stuff, you can bring in experts, and there are experts that do want to be employees.
Mm-hmm.
That's hands down, that don't want to be entrepreneurs. And so you can find those experts to help you scale your business and help you solve problems.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. There's people that love every aspect of every business. And one of the things too is if you have like a tiny bit of business success, you can bring people on and, you know, especially overseas people for less money than you'd think.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that in a way of like, oh, don't pay people, but just overall, reasonable staff costs, if you have a successful business, aren't crazy. So like, you know, let's say you get a business up to where you're making $100,000 a year regularly. If you go and you find someone that's going to cost you $60,000 a year, sure, you're going to now have to make $40,000 a year, assuming no overhead. This is a fantasy business that you just like make profit on. But does that $60,000 a year person give you the freedom to now go make another $100,000 a year, right? And that's kind of what you have to look at it.
That's the goal, right?
Yeah. And one of the exercises that we had to do with our business coach is we had to go through and we were plotting out our business and like basically our end game. And then we had to reverse engineer what our staff and our teams and everything had to look like. And I'm looking for the actual document here, but I think we ended up having, it was like 26 staff members or 27 staff members, which is a lot of people.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
With people that we were paying like very well in a lot of these roles. And our total staff cost, I think, was like $1.4 million, right?
Yeah, it was still pretty low on an annual basis. I mean, there were some virtual like employees that, you know, you're paying $5 an hour within that staff cost, but there's a lot of like local and on-site US-based employees in that as well. Because you need, for some of those roles, we need to just, you know, high achievers that are local to the US.
Yeah, exactly. So then you think if you're a small operation that's making, I mean, that's, the reason I point this out too is we know several people that are two-man shows or two-person shows or three-person shows that they'll be, you know, the couple in the VA and they're making multi-seven figures and they literally say like, I don't think we have the finances to bring somebody on because I think that the problem is people sort of think about it and they're like, okay, I mean, if they inflated their lifestyle, that's on them, right? That's their own problem.
Yeah, that's their problem. Yep.
But I think a lot of people, what they do is they're like, okay, so I need to pay this person $120,000 a year. Like, I can't afford that. It's like, well, yeah, you can't afford that if you had to pay them like this month, like the whole right. year. But realize that it goes
out. You don't do that. That's not how it works.
It's not how it works.
They make money. Yeah. And yeah, exactly. No, and it's a challenge too. I've gone through that like mentally before of like, God, how are we going to pay this employee if we bring them on? And you're right. That is a risk. And that does suck that if you hire somebody and it happens, if you hired somebody and you're like, sorry, didn't work out the way I wanted to. We can't pay you. See ya. And that person's uprooted their life or changed jobs or whatever. That is part of it. And so that's why you work your ass off to make sure that that doesn't happen. You know, you and I famously hired our first acquisition manager with not enough money to cover any of our costs associated with that and or marketing at that point in time. But we knew we had to do that. We had to take massive action and get that person in there so that we could produce enough revenue to live another day. And lo and behold, we're still here and we never have missed payroll yet. And there's been multiple times where we're like, ooh, it's going to be tight this month when we bring this person on.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Even right now, as we're growing over finances and, you know, you and I have had some discussion about bringing over like a growth expert and that sort of stuff. And we're like, well, technically mm-hmm. if we bring that person on, we're going to be in the negative, like a, you know, pretty little decent sum of money, depending on how many deals close and things like that. But like our sort of base minimum and our staff cost and everything else in the middle will put us at a negative cost. And it's like, well, do we want to carry that? And it's like, I mean, if that person allows us to make 10x that over the next couple of months, absolutely, it makes sense.
Yep. It's just like spending marketing, right? Like when we go and drop another batch of mail, like we know it should and will produce some level of income, but it doesn't happen right when you spend the money. And so I also like to correlate this conversation to investing. So you're used to, as somebody probably listening to this podcast, you're used to the idea of investing in an asset like real estate. There's also an asset called your business. And so if you're operating a business, sometimes you have to put money into that business. Like we've done that when we've started up businesses or we've had to do capital calls for certain things. And mm-hmm. at this point in time, it's like, okay, it's not, you know, if it's when that money comes back to us. And so you're investing in that. And sometimes it takes a while to come back to you. Other times it's like a freaking home run and it's a rocket ship. You don't always know the results, but as you get experience, you kind of learn to gauge that and you learn that it's an investment and you're not flushing money down the toilet when you're hiring and paying for staff that are inevitably going to scale your business.
Yeah. And I think that's the key point is, like I said, understanding that's an investment is a difficult mindset shift that is honestly extremely hard to make until you have proof of concept. Mm-hmm. You know, and we see that with, you know, some of our students, we saw that with ourselves. I mean, even when we bring on new roles, it's always like, well, does this person actually make sense? And, you know, like I said, it doesn't always. Like we have had people that have joined our team for 1 month and then we've been like, honestly, this role is not effective or this person is not effective. Like we need to, you know, review that. And that's never a fun situation, but that's the reality of it, right? And big companies do that, small companies do that, and that's kind of how it works. So, yeah. Anyways, all right. So I guess to rehash stuff, going from that one-man team or woman show, that one man or woman show to scaling up from there, when exactly you should do that? First off, look at your goals and, you know, see like mm-hmm. if you do you think that you would be able to go a little bit quicker if you had some additional help. That's a big thing. Second thing would be to analyze your weaknesses and see if you have major gaps that could be more easily filled by an expert in that rather than trying to learn it yourself. I think that this is especially true when it comes to things like, you know, sales or marketing or these things that are like kind of natural skill sets that some people have and some people don't. Like, you know, if you're an introverted person, don't try to teach yourself hard sales. Like, sure, you would probably benefit from it, but it's going to take you for freaking ever and you're always going to hate it, even if you do get good at it.
Yep.
So fill those gaps. And then the third thing will be if you have parts of your business that are taking a lot of your time, that you regularly find yourself pushing off, that you don't want to do anymore, bring on people to do those things. You know, like we all have to do stuff we don't have to do, but if it is making it so your business is no longer enjoyable for you, then you should find someone to come and do that stuff. Because, you know, even if you're making a little bit of success, you probably can pay a VA $5 an hour. It's $800 a month full time.
Oh, that's it? $800 a month?
Yep. That's what.
So cheap. Or you could pay double that if you go get a staffing agency and then they will give you the exact same employee that you would have hired for half that.
I know, right?
Which is a whole other conversation, but not to sidetrack us too much, but no, I can't agree more with those points. And I don't know what the old adage is, but it's like, you know, you could go like, what is it? You can get to where you're going a lot faster if you go alone, but you can go a lot further together. And so bringing those people on, whether they're partners or employees, you can tend to get to go a lot further together. And ultimately, it does feel like you're slowing down by hiring people. And it might actually slow you down for a minute while you get them ready to go, but you can go so much further with them. So that's just my opinion. Does it mean you have to leave your solopreneur gig? Hell no. If your quality of life is great, say you're working 20 hours a week and that's all you want to work, you're making $150,000 a year from your business, you enjoy doing each element of it, and you can put up with some of the grind because it's easy, that's fine too. It's a personal choice.
It is. Exactly. It's a personal choice. And also too, I'll say, if you are that person and you're not making $50,000 a year, but you're happy on $50,000 a year that you're making, or 35, then you do you. Like, you know, not everyone has to be swinging for the fences either. It all comes down to what you're willing to do. Like, I remember meeting someone here in Spokane a while back. It was him. It was a guy that was like in his like 70s. He had his son that, you know, he was like in his 50s. They flipped two houses a year, and the money that they made on their houses was what they made for the year. And that was what they did. So they would make, you know, $60,000 to $120,000 a year. They split that. It would take them, you know, a couple months worth of work to do each one. And then they would spend the rest of the time up at the lake, he said. And that was what they did. So
I love it. Good for them.
Yeah. So exactly. Simple lifestyle. But anyways, all right, guys. Well, thanks so much for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed the rambling of two real estate idiots for 35 minutes. One thing I wanted to say, because I recently got an Instagram comment from somebody that said, I didn't realize that you had a group coaching program and they wanted some more information about it, which we kind of like pushed it a little bit a while back and then we stopped because we were trying to be less salesy, but I'm putting this out here. We have a group coaching program if you would be interested, where we give you the full soup to nuts of how we built our business. We have a mastermind community that's run through Slack. We have two group calls a week, and we are looking at bringing in experts to do talks, and then our members get first, I guess, like ability to request content, long form, short form, all that sort of stuff. So they get to participate in the show a little bit too. But if you go to collectingkeyspodcast.com and you go and you click on the become an instant investor in the top right, it will give you the breakdown of all the stuff that we offer. So I promise I'm not going to start plugging that all the time and be that guy. But someone said they didn't even know. That means I got to talk about it at least a little bit more.
Friendly reminder.
It's a friendly reminder. Yeah. So go to collectingkeyspodcast.com and click on the become an instant investor little blue button in the top right. And that'll take you to the full list of stuff that we offer. Anyways, guys, hopefully you enjoy this. Please go and share with anyone who might find it entertaining or interesting, or is looking to scale beyond that solopreneur into, you know, the multi-person business or not. Either way, you kind of do you. And if you leave us a 5-star review where you listen to podcasts and you send me a screenshot on my Instagram at Mike_invest, I'll send you a free t-shirt. I actually got two more of those today. I have 5 t-shirts I got to send out on Friday.
Nice, man. You got to hire someone to do that.
I do, though, honestly. But I was also like, shit, I'm going to run out of large t-shirts because all men are the same size.
All men are larges.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, guys, send me a DM of your 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast. I'll happily send you a Collecting Keys shirt. And besides that, guys, thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to y'all next week.
See y'all.
Thanks for listening. Please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And check us out at collectingkeyspodcast.com for tips and guides on starting your own real estate investment and wholesaling business.